Il Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Il Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Il Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. And now it's time to introduce my lovely, lovely co-host for this episode.
Two lovelies. That feels great. I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
I'm Leanne Zinsmeister.
And I am senior food and beverage editor Brett Thorne.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to today's episode.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Holly.
Glad to be here.
So what have you guys been up to? Tell me all the hot gossip.
Hot gossip.
Always hot gossip, but I feel like we never have.
We're pretty boring people. No gossip. Can I just talk about real quick you guys are probably sick of me talking about this, but I want to talk about the show The Bear. Can we talk about this? Because nobody, like, responded to my Slack thing, and yet as I watched that show, I'm like, I hope my whole team is watching this show, but, like, nobody seemed to really care. Brett, you should watch it especially. Do you guys know the premise of the show?
My social media is excited about The Bear. I'm not watching it.
I'm not refusing.
I just haven't watched it, but you're saying I should. What service is it on?
Well, it aired originally on FX, but now I access it through Hulu. All of the episodes are on Hulu. It's a very realistic restaurant show. Let's just say that. It's fiction. It's not a reality restaurant show. It is a fictionalized version of a restaurant kitchen that I have not worked in a restaurant kitchen. I'll be honest and just say I have not worked in a restaurant kitchen, but everybody I'm seeing is saying it's very realistic take on restaurants. But I think the reason I kept thinking, I hope my team is watching this, is there's just lots of little nuggets in there that I think are amusing to people in the know in the restaurant industry that other people wouldn't catch. And there's a very funny moment where they bemoan that a Sweetgreen is moving in next door that just felt like, that's kind of funny. But not everybody gets it, right? So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. I wanted to get into a little bit of pop culture to start the podcast.
Thank you. You know, yesterday we shot a video edition of Menu Tracker, and we had the latest Sweetgreen offerings, one of them, salad.
How was that?
It's good food.
It was my favorite of the, what did we have, like four fast casual salads yesterday, or like three in a QSR, and that was my favorite salad of the salads.
The greens
did you make good food?
Yeah,
I think the comment in the show was basically the neighborhood was gentrifying, and the notice that, or the acknowledging that Sweetgreen was moving in was like, ah, there goes the neighborhood kind of a thing, which, no offense to Sweetgreen, they make great food. I like Sweetgreen a good deal, but, you know, it kind of is like, yeah, I get that reference, you know.
Yes.
Well, I've been staying with my parents a lot recently, and so when I go there, I watch MasterChef. So I've been catching up on MasterChef a lot. I quite enjoy the show.
I'm shuddering. Anybody and else? Shaking my head. That's a Gordon Ramsay one, right?
Yes, it's a Gordon Ramsay show.
My flesh starts to crawl off of my body if I see Gordon Ramsay on television.
Same. Yeah, my current pop culture references are not restaurant related, so. When I'm done with work, I need to look at things that have nothing to do with work.
What about Stranger Things? So I finished Stranger Things last night, the latest season, best season in my opinion, for those Stranger Things fans out there. But they have some fun restaurant references in there too. There was a ongoing pizza truck character person throughout the season. I don't know. There are restaurant connections in that show. So why don't you go watch that, Leanne? You can watch Stranger Things and feel like it's work.
I've been told by people who know me even better than the three of you that any episode of Stranger Things will give me nightmares, and that the most recent season is actually the most terrifying. So yeah. I will not be watching. That's a show that, like, my roommate will turn off if I walk in the room.
Interesting.
And I trust her judgment on that and a couple other friends who have told me the same thing. So I will not be watching Stranger Things. No.
Fair enough. I am sensitive to horror, and I don't like the horror genre at all. But I have found Stranger Things palatable because it like balances it with a little bit of the, you know, E.T. level teenage angsty stuff. I don't know. That's my plug. But yeah, it's dark. The latest season's dark.
I love horror. I love darkness. I will watch it eventually. These days, I'm just keep rewatching old episodes of Rick and Morty for some reason.
Wow, it's a very Brett show.
Rick and Morty kick. You've mentioned that on this podcast before that you're a Rick and Morty fan.
It's great. It's insightful. Not a lot of food. There is one episode in which, in a different universe that has telepathic spiders, a peace accord is formed between the humans and the spiders, and so now the ice cream, which was the best ice cream in the multiverse, has flies in it now because it needs to be palatable to humans and arachnids.
Food related, yeah. Food tangential.
Right.
Food, yeah, something like that.
Definitely food related.
Food adjacent.
A little food scary. Foodborne illness, a little bit.
Yeah, I don't want to like ever. Yeah. But, you know, I don't
food
have
horror.
To get along with telepathic spiders.
None of us do, thank goodness.
Do you
because
think
we
anybody
are not
who listens to this podcast comes here for TV recommendations?
Yes, I think that's all
sure.
they come here for.
They will know.
All right, well, let's get into the news. So Brett, you wrote the story earlier this week. Subway is rolling out this new line of sandwiches. That's their biggest menu update in their 60-year history. So that's pretty exciting for Subway. It's moving away from their traditional sandwiches. It's actually like a pre-designed line of sandwiches. Can you tell us a little about it?
Well, you just did. Yeah, no, it's a dozen curated sandwiches called the Subway Series in four categories. You got the chicken sandwiches, you got your Italian sandwiches, you got your cheesesteaks, and you got your clubs. And that's what most people order anyway. And what they found, what Subway management found in testing these sandwiches, which they did for several months in various markets, was that it made making the sandwiches easier because there were fewer customizations. It increased customer satisfaction because you have these sandwiches that already taste good, cuts down on labor, makes training easier. So overall, it makes things easier and better for everyone, so they say. And if you want to go in and just get turkey on a roll with mayonnaise, you can do that. But they have these dozen sandwiches that are supposed to be something for everybody, and about half of the people who ordered them didn't change anything. They just said, give me number two.
Does this feel like the death of the customization era, right? Doesn't this feel a little bit symbolic? Because, you know, 2010, 11, 12, everybody was trying to be the Chipotle of this, that, and the other thing. Customization was in. Everybody talked about how much millennials wanted customization. And I remember thinking when everybody wanted to be the Chipotle of this, that, or the other thing, I remember thinking, well, you really want to be the Subway of this, that, or the other thing, because Subway was the first one that really established customization as a thing and didn't always get the proper credit I think it maybe deserved. But for basically the original king of customization to say, yeah, maybe we'll go to signature menu items, it feels a little bit symbolic. And quite frankly, I was never a big fan of customization. It makes me anxious to walk in and be forced into 10 different decisions. I don't always know what I want. Another brand that has gone in this direction toward signature items is Cava. And like, I go into a Cava and look, I'm just not an expert on Greek Mediterranean flavors. And so I don't know what I want and what works together. And I want to go I want that, give me that. A chef made that and I trust them. Instead, they're like, what topping do you want? What flavor dressing do you want? What, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Subway is not that anxiety-inducing because the flavors are fairly straightforward. I've been eating at Subway for my entire life. But I still like this move because I am, call me simple or whatever, but I like to point at a number and say that. I want that. I don't want to then tell you, yes, this, that, point, and anyway. So I may not be the core demographic of Subway. I don't know. But to me, this feels like a smart move. It just feels like the direction that we're going in. It simplifies everything.
I think you're the core demographic of Subway, Sam.
Probably. I think you are, too.
I'm probably now the most average American, especially now that I live in Columbus, Ohio. I am the average American.
Which is a traditional test market for stuff, so.
With your nuclear family.
That's right.
You're the guy that the marketing guys talk about, the 5-year-old white girl with the dog.
Yep. So all you restaurants out there, just so you know, I'm your core demographic if you want to pick my brain. I'm here for
you. Well, I'm a Brooklynite and a food expert, so I could be, you know, potentially an insufferable snob, but I just want people to hand me a sandwich, too. I don't want to fuss and make all the decisions. In fact, they already did all the research. Just give me my sandwich. There's a ramen place in my neighborhood where you can go in and you can specify the richness of the broth and the thickness of the noodles and like three other things. And I go in and I say, I want, you know, the second one. That's it. And I see the server's shoulders just kind of relax when I just say, just give me the regular thing.
Actually, so that's an interesting point, too. This is good for labor, right? I mean, for those employees who have to walk down asking questions, making suggestions, that's another thing I was always doing at Kava, which is, what would you recommend? What do you think makes sense here? And now they can just, like, look at the card taped to the thing above their workstation that says the number 2 is these ingredients, and they just slap it together and give it to you. It's good for labor. So, yeah, you heard it here first. Customization is dead. Long live signature menu items.
That's a little dramatic.
Let's dial back the hyperbole a little bit, Sam. No, I mean, half of the customers didn't change anything in their sandwiches, which meant half of them did. You know, there's always...
Well, half of like, them are wrong, me. So...
But, well, yes. even if you say something like, you know, I'd like a number 2 with no tomato, like, that's silly.
Which I would do.
Building a number 2 from scratch, like...
Yeah.
Well, so one place that I think does customization really well, I will say, is Dig, because I think Dig has very few ingredients. It's not as heightened as someplace like a Sweetgreen or like a Just Salad, where you know, you have to go and you have to like pick each thing and you have to go down the line when there's so many things. At some place like a Dig, there's just like you get 2 sides, you get a protein, and you get a base. And that's just kind of it. And I feel like that's a place that does customization really well, because you're not handling all these different ingredients. You're not handling all these different items. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. There's not that much else to choose from. And I feel like that's a place that does customization well, and it's not anxiety-inducing. And, I mean, I feel like even I get anxiety at a lot of these places. I totally understand. I totally get it. I get anxiety going up to Kava, too. And I love Kava, like, with a passion.
Yeah, I should note, too, I do as well. And I think their signature menu items are really fantastic, and it was a good move for them. But yeah, I mean, I guess to your point, Holly, it's like, customization itself is not the problem. It is the amount of choice. So if you offer like 2 or 3 choices, that's not too big of a deal. But I still remember, I think it was the fast casual pizza places that really harped on this early on, which was, we've got 50 toppings for you to choose from. And I don't need 50 different toppings to choose from on my pizza. I want 5. So yeah, I don't know. I think all of this is pointing to as things simplify in the service model, everybody talks about stripping friction out of the experience, right? As simple as possible for you to get your food. It strikes me that this is moving to the menu too. Keep the menu simple, keep the decision simple. I mean, the amount of times I press my finger to the screen on my phone to order food, that should be limited, the number of times I have to do that to get my food. So that affects the menu.
Well, that's also why the Chipotle menu works so well for customization, because it's a very straightforward, simple menu.
You're right.
And you're not going to mess it up. All the flavors go together well.
Right.
You might remember that, 15 years ago, Chipotle tried to do a Southeast Asian concept with the same model. And it did not work because, I mean, I lived in Southeast Asia. I know what the flavors are supposed to be like. And I went to one of them, I think they're called Chop House, in D.C., where they originated. And I tried to construct a Northern Thai dish based on the ingredients they had. And it just tasted like chaos when it was all mixed together. You know, the food just didn't go together well. And I'm an informed consumer. So if you're not, you're just going to have food that doesn't taste good.
It tasted like chaos.
Some people may like the flavors of chaos.
Well, the kids like stuff like that. Energy drinks. I don't know why people like those flavors. It tastes like sweetened battery acid to me.
Kids these days.
It's like a Four Loko.
Drinking
Four Loko. That's a blast from the past. Hey, should we tell our audience that we lost Leanne? She's gone.
We did lose Leanne. She's gone. She finally gave up on us.
She's pro customization. She's like, I cannot tolerate this conversation.
We just had connectivity issues. That's all. Yeah. I'm sure she's healthy. Okay.
She's safe. We promise.
So we're going to have a dealer's choice here because we are running out of time. So which story would you guys rather talk about? Would you rather talk about Panera ending its merger agreement with Danny Meyer's SPAC? Or would you rather talk about Amazon agreeing to a stake in Grubhub's parent company?
I would vote Amazon, Grubhub. I have one comment on the Panera SPAC, which is their ticker symbol was going to be the worst ever. Hugs. So... to me, it's like, yeah, okay, well, now we don't have to deal with hugs. No knock on either of those parties, but felt like a weird match in the beginning, so it's just not happening. So, anyway, I vote Amazon.
Yeah, sure.
Great, so let's talk about Amazon, which agreed to get a 2% stake in Grubhub's parent company, which already resulted in some Prime deals on Grubhub Plus membership. So let's talk about that.
I have two thoughts, and I'm going to hold these two things as truths at the same time. But the first is that Amazon terrifies me and is slowly taking over the world, and this is one more step in that process as they welcome back Leanne just in time.
Oh, Leanne's back!
Amazon and Grubhub. Anyway, you didn't miss much. You didn't miss much, although we thought maybe you were just so horrified by our customization conversation and our so pro customization that you decided to drop off.
It can work. In actuality, it can work. But.
Yeah, well, at least you're back. We just told the audience that you hated our guts and decided to leave.
But here you are. No.
Might still hate our guys. So I, as a Amazon Prime member who has multiple days a week on average, Amazon packages arriving on my front stoop, so I'm a hypocrite because I think Amazon is evil and taking over the world, but I also do take advantage of their services. And there's a facility close to my house, so I get a lot of like same day things, which is kind of incredible. But you know, this is a smart business move for Amazon, right? Like, you know, so on one hand, evil taking over the world, but on the other hand, like, okay, yeah, I get it. Because look, it's going to be, it's a smart business deal for them. They're taking a small stake. They're basically kicking tires, right, to see how this goes. It's great for Grubhub, which was, I think, seeding ground to DoorDash and Uber Eats. Dog is shaking. Grubhub was really, I don't know, I think was becoming a little bit... falling behind in the third-party delivery wars, and now here they can have access to what I'm assuming is hundreds of millions of Prime members. It just makes a lot of sense for both parties because they can expand their business, have lots of access to new potential customers, and Amazon can offer food delivery where it could not previously. Anyway, the rest of you share conversations while I let my dog out of my office.
I'm guessing tens of millions, not hundreds of millions, but still it's a lot. And it's a logical thing that is probably very good for all parties involved.
I agree.
I don't use much of either of them. I do have a little bit of Amazon Prime as I watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but I don't use delivery apps very much. I usually go on to the restaurant's website and see how they want me to get it delivered, and usually it's not one of the mainstream third-party delivery services, so I use whatever they say. And also, I like to go out and get some exercise and eat in the restaurant. So
That's interesting, because I, at the beginning of the pandemic, I started calling restaurants and asking them how they want me to order well, and I find that most of them more now will say, please just go on Grubhub or whatever. Which is also interesting, because Brett and I are neighbors. so we must be frequenting different restaurants. I was going to say, as a consumer, I'm excited for this year of free Grubhub Plus. I'm paying anyway. So for me as a consumer, great, because I'm going to save money that I would otherwise be spending. Of course, a lot of Grubhub consumers will just be ordering out more than they already do, which is good for Grubhub and ultimately good for restaurants. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm primarily a DoorDash customer for no particular reason. I exchange a lot of DoorDash gift cards. Like, we give those as gifts to people. They give it to us as gifts because it's a nice gift card. We've had a lot of that since we've moved. And I'm ambivalent on my delivery provider. It's just what restaurants do they have? I will shift to Grubhub now if it means I can get the free year of Grubhub, sure. I mean, because again, I'm ambivalent. There is no leg up on these services. I have no loyalty to them. It is what restaurants are present on your in your marketplace. So there you go. I'm easy to order. Give me free stuff.
I really only order delivery from two places. One is Antonio's Pizza. Delicious. And I use the Slice app for that. And the other one is Authentic Szechuan Tofu on Fifth, which is just delicious Chinese food. And they are on an app called Beyond Menu, which has a lot of Asian restaurants. And it costs me less, so I assume it costs the restaurants less. And also, Authentic Szechuan Tofu on Fifth's website directs me to Beyond Menu. So, and those are the only two places I order from.
Is that their full name of the restaurant?
Might be Authentic Szechuan Tofu, Authentic Tofu Szechuan. I don't know.
Is there an acronym or something? My goodness.
No. It's one of those traditional mom-and-pop Chinese restaurants. This one just happens to serve really good Szechuan food. Their Mapo Tofu is delicious.
Quite a name. I mean, I guess it does all the marketing for it.
Yeah, I don't normally order from a place named Tofu just because... Like, I'm cool with meatless meals, but that's not my goal.
I have both the DoorDash and the Grubhub app on my phone. Don't know which one I use to order Taco Bell, but I do use one of them to order my Taco Bell, which is the only thing I order for delivery exclusively, is Taco Bell.
I think we go via the Taco Bell app, which I have on my phone. But as I said, I only order from the two places, so I haven't ordered from Taco Bell in a long time.
I have all the apps plus Taco Bell apps, the Starbucks app. I've been known to go into different apps and like setting up the same order, and then just it'll be like slightly different prices because fees are different, things like that. And then I just order on whichever app is cheapest on. But again, that just means Grubhub just got, you know, a leg up in my business. So
it feels like a lot of work.
But sometimes I'll go into an app and it'll say, you know, it'll be like an hour and 15 minutes for this delivery, and that'll feel like a long time. And another app says they can have it in 20. I really don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but...
Me neither.
Brooklyn, man.
Comparison shopping is a sport, too. It can be fun.
Yeah. I mean, I don't do it all the time, but if I've got nothing better to do on a Sunday afternoon and I'm just trying to get some tacos, then why not? Sure.
Brooklyn, I don't understand you guys out there.
Holly, you used
I would never wait an hour 15 minutes for food. I'm spoiled out here.
I guess that's my signal to go do something else.
It's very true. That's very true. But so what are some of the perks of Grubhub Plus? I mean, I'm a little I'm a little naive to knowing what Grubhub Plus is. Does anybody really know what some of the perks are to being a member of Grubhub Plus?
All I'm aware of is the lack of.
Okay.
Like $5 an order.
Yeah.
They're not. It'll save people money in the long run, I think. Otherwise, I've only seen it advertised as having other rewards and benefits, but I don't know what those are. I'll let you know.
That's worth it.
Yeah. But just not have delivery fees, especially. I don't think it's ever been worth it for me to pay for Grubhub Plus, which I won't say. I don't know. I think it's like a few bucks a month. But I don't think I order enough food for that to be worth it. But for free, yeah.
I thought it was interesting that, like, instantly you saw this appear on the website. On the Amazon website. That instantly, that this was, like, a thing that happened.
Been in the works probably for a while.
Yeah. But I was just, like, I thought that was so interesting that it was an instant, like, it was announced and then it was just, boom.
It's like when you two just immediately put an album on your phone. It's just, like, okay, maybe that's too old a reference for some people. But, I'm going a deep cut on that one. But no, the one thing I'll add, the last thing I'll say about this is the, again, going back to the business part of this and how basically Amazon acquired 2% stake with the potential to go up to, I believe it's a 15% stake. I find very interesting because, again, they're kicking tires. They're going to just say, hey, well, how much do people access this and want this and stick with it? Okay, yeah, I'll take a 15%. Oh, yeah, sure, I'll take a 50%. Let's just acquire Grubhub outright. You know, like it feels to me that kind of a process. And Amazon has the clout to pull that off, so.
Well, that's awesome, and can't wait to watch Amazon take over the world and put chips in all of our brains and do frightening things, so.
Save it for the conspiracy podcast, Holly.
All right, Brett, why don't you tell us about your interview this week?
Week. Actually, I spoke to him a little while ago, but for this episode, I spoke with Friendly's Chief Experience Officer, Roberto De Angelis. And when you think of menu innovation, you do not generally think of Friendly's. But they've done some really crazy stuff. You can now get a burger with fig jam on it. You can get a burger with Frico, you know, the kind of griddled cheese crisps from Northern Italy. They have a Doritos Cool Ranch chopped cheeseburger, and they have beef stroganoff and another pasta, Tex-Mex Alfredo taco pasta. They never used to have pasta. They added two salads, and it turns out people who go to Friendly's like salads. And so I contacted them to say, what the hell are you doing and who can I interview? And they said, Roberto De Angelis. Fascinating guy who also talks about the different demographics that they went after for different menu items. And it's really kind of a deep dive into this menu transformation and understanding American consumers that I think everybody's going to really enjoy.
Great. I mean, that made me hungry just talking about it, so. Can't wait to hear more. Thank you all for joining me today. We will see you all in person next week for the podcast.
Correct. Yes.
So, at least.
You mean Sam's coming to town?
Sam's coming to town, so we'll be doing the podcast in person.
Sam is coming to town.
Oh, we even got a song. That was something. Maybe don't do that again, but that was something.
New extra serving theme song? Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed it, Sam.
All right. Well, so we'll see you guys next week in person. Until then, enjoy the interview, stay safe, and have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.
Il Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Il Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan.
At Bel Joyoso, every cheese is a specialty.
Roberto De Angelis. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, that's me.
You are the Chief Experience Officer of Friendly's.
Yes.
How you doing?
Doing very well. I started this position almost a year ago, and I cannot tell you how wonderful of a journey has been so far.
Well, what were you doing before?
Before I was a Chief Operating Officer for Global Development for the P.F. Chang's brand.
Very nice. So you're a development guy, a international opener of restaurants.
Yes, well, I've done many things. So my bag of tricks is pretty vast. It's like the Mary Poppins bag. I can always pull something out of it. You know, I'm not a teenager anymore. So I have had my share of victories and defeat, you know, so lots of stories to tell.
Can you open an umbrella and fly like Mary Poppins?
Yes. I do that on very special days when it's really, really needed.
Well, that's just supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I'm so glad.
I can barely speak English. As you can see, I have an accent because I am Italian.
Where in Italy are you from?
I'm from the island of Capri.
Oh.
In the Gulf of Naples, yes.
That's a sexy island, I am told. I have not been.
It is. And it's also a great business card to say, where are you from? I'm from Capri. Oh, Capri. I love Capri. It's always a good start of a conversation. It's a great icebreaker.
And sunny. I imagine it is very sunny.
Yeah, it's very sunny. The winter, not so, because the seas are really rough. So the winters, things shut down like mid-November, beginning of November. And then everything reopens again at Easter. So you go those 5-6 months of being really dormant. You get to do fun things because the summers are brutal. So lots of work, a lot of people, as you can imagine.
So in the winter, in the off season, what do? Play guitar?
In the off season, you fix your business, or you travel, or those that need to continue their employment, they do the winter season. So they go to St. Moritz, they go on the Alps, you know, to do the winter season. And
right.
They go back to Capri for the summer season. It's a nice gig.
That is nice. And what sort of business is your family in Capri?
My family is in the hotel business.
Ah.
Yes. So I was supposed to be there as well, but at a very young age, my father sent me to London for training, and I never went back. From London, I went to New York City, arrived to the US, had a sponsorship with the Hyatt Hotels, continue on with the Ritz-Carlton, and never looked back. I just like it here. American has been great to me. I love to do business here, and I love everyone.
So you started out in high-end hospitality.
Yes.
And then you moved to chain restaurants from there?
Yes, correct. I did some restaurants on my own for a long period of time. And then I went to the corporate world, yes.
And so you were P.F. Chang's, probably some other places. And then a year ago, you came to Friendly's.
Correct.
And so I obviously write a lot about new menu items and stuff. And I was looking at the new menu items that you guys introduced a little while ago, not too long ago. And I thought, what is going on here? How is it that Friendly's, a family dining restaurant known for straightforward food, suddenly has fig jam and a piece of Frico on a cheeseburger? Like how
I saw that one. Yes.
How did you are you the man behind that I think uncharacteristic innovation at Friendly's?
All right. So let's let's start from the beginning of where we first thought about, you know, a new menu. Mm-hmm. As you know, the company was purchased a little over a year ago in very early 2021, but the company was not purchased by strangers. You know, some of the partners are longtime Friendly's people. Our COO has been with Friendly's for 42, 41 years. Another partner has been with Friendly's for 25. Another one in an indirect way, another 20 years. So the new menu did not happen because new people came to bring new ideas. The new menu happened because we had enough people in the ownership that really understood what will it take to bring an icon back. And let me, you know, underline the word icon, because Friendly, it is an iconic brand. It is a legacy brand. Friendly is the third oldest restaurant chain in United States. Third oldest. Older than Friendly's, you'll see White Castle and AEW. And also on the ice cream side, because remember, Friendly's is two businesses in one. On the ice cream side, Friendly's is the number 18th running ice cream shop in United States. And in those 18, you have some that are dating back in the 18th century. So amazing stuff.
Wow.
Trying to make a long story short on your very complex question.
Take your time.
Yes, yes. So when we took over Friendly's, the first thing we did was to look at our clientele, right? Take a really good look at our clientele, because we did not buy a brand that was absolutely thriving. The brand had its challenges. So what are these challenges? And the first thing that we noticed, clearly Friendly's has five groups of customers. The first group being kids, age up to 12, which represents about 32% of the business. Then you have teens, 13 to 19, and they represent about 18% of the business. And then you have the youth, which is an important component. The youth, age between 20 and 29, and that is the lowest, segment, customer segment at the, in Friendly's as far as traffic, you know, about 3%. And then you have the mature crowd, 30 to 60, and then the modern elders, 60 and wiser. So the first thing was apparent that, you know, why the youth is not coming to Friendly's. It seems like as soon as they start to drive and they don't need mom and dad anymore to take them to Friendly's, they're going off on other things and try other experiences. And so we were faced with a decision to see what to do with this menu. The first decision was to tear the menu down. At the very beginning of time, Friendly's had 11 items on the menu. And then over time, you know, that number exploded to 52 items plus LTOs, but the size of the kitchen really remained the same. So it was becoming very challenging. It was challenging and difficult to execute well 52 plus items. So order of number one, you know, pare down the menu. Number two, you know, should we design these new items to enter the menu for which group? You know, kids, teens, the youth, the adults, the mature. And we decided to create items that are wedged between the large sector of the youth and then spill over into the mature crowd. So hence the fig jam, and some of the crazy items you see like the chop burgers and other things. And it really, really worked. You know, these items really, really attract, you know, that new age group. I cannot say they're already there, many of them, because we just started. But clearly, if you think about the positioning of the new menu, I would say that a part of the menu is positioned to attract the youth, you know, age 20, 29. And the other parts of the menu is really designed to improve a top of mind position, sending a message, you know, to those who would not consider Friendly's for a dining experience.
So, yeah, you said that kids up to 12 years old are 32% of your customers, and then teens are 18%. So people 18 and under are half of your customers. So you're doing fine with them. You're selling them ice cream, certainly, and burgers and chicken tenders and all of that, and no problem. Yes. So you decided to go for the next age group, which they want to experiment a bit more without, you know, going nuts.
Yes, you see, Brett, you can have a great customer, and a great customer is someone that comes to you every week, right? Amazing customer. Everybody will love one of those, right? But there is the other side of the coin of a great customer. He comes so often, he doesn't talk about you anymore. He just come. It's a great to have it, but he doesn't talk about it.
Right.
The youth group, the 20 to 29, they talk about it. They see something pretty, they take it pictures, they post, TikTok. I don't have to tell you the rest of the story, right? But also there is another important factor that I'm discovering as I also age and become wiser as a more than elder, that kids and the more than elders are really not looking for change. They're really not looking for change. The kids and the mature elders, they're happy the way things are. And it was very important for us to also have a chunk of the menu to remain the way it was. That was very important to us. Right. So at the end of the day, the menu has 42 items, 12 are new, which represent 30% of the overall menu, a very ambitious number, a very big number, but thus far has been received extremely, extremely well. And actually was the son of our CEO, Craig Ehrlich, his son, Tyler, when I was doing my discovery with Friendly's, he said, Tyler, come with me to Friendly's. You know, from your point of view as a kid, what do you think? Should we do this? Should we do that? And, you know, I say, you know, kids are really not looking for change. That was like an eye-opener for me, you know, coming from a kid. So that was a revelation.
Yes. And how old is Tyler?
Tyler now is 15 years old.
Yes. So he was 14 back then, or maybe 13.
Correct. Yes.
And he said, we don't want change. And, you know, I don't have kids, but I have friends with kids, and they want the food to be the way they want the food to be. And usually that's plain, undressed, not fussed over, just food.
Yes.
And modern elders, I guess, are kind of the same way. Like, they've already made their decisions about what they like. They don't need to try a new thing. They already know. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. That's very, very much correct. Yes.
So these items, and I'm counting 13. Maybe I'm counting wrong. We got, maybe you already had a chicken Caesar and you just reworked it. You probably already had a chicken Caesar. Or is that new? Is that genuinely new?
No. Chicken Caesar is new with the Cobb salad. Those are the two new salads. And we were shocked during trial that people just love to have a salad at Friendly's. We also introduced pasta. We didn't have pasta on the menu. So we introduced pasta, and pasta is outperforming some of the other categories as well, you know, with two items. So we are very pleased that people are not just thinking of Friendly's as, you know, burger, ice cream, and melts, but they are starting to considering us for, you know, salads and pasta, because we can definitely compete in this space.
Yeah, the pastas are Tex-Mex Alfredo taco pasta. So that's like a bolognese, but with Tex-Mex spices and then an Alfredo sriracha sauce on it, right?
Yes.
Did I get it right?
It is a creamy sauce. It's exactly a Mexican Alfredo. The name, you know, we're back and forth what to do with the name, but I tell you, it's one of those items that after you taste it, the next day you start craving that item. Just like the beef stroganoff, right? Who does not like beef stroganoff? And it was important that if we add two pastas on the menu, it was important that we add two pasta that when you read about it, you start to salivate and something in your head say, come on, try it. We didn't want to be too daring.
And the stroganoff, which you call the banging beef stroganoff, looks pretty traditional. It's beef and a cream sauce and mushrooms, onion, and garlic. And what kind of pasta do you guys use?
We use a cavatappi, the one that are shaped like a corkscrew.
Right. Those are fun to eat.
Oh, those are fun to eat also because it's a type of shape of pasta that appeals to different generations.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, who doesn't want to eat a corkscrew-shaped pasta? And you have two super melts. Melts seem to be very trendy with the cheese, you know, like patty melts, but what you know, you helped develop them with cheese melted on them. You got an American cheese brisket one, and you got a grilled cheese matzah super melt with chicken breast and red peppers and pesto, right? On sourdough, both on sourdough.
Yes, and you know, those are very easy for us to execute. Important to say that when we designed the menu, you know, we prepared lots of outside items, Brad.
Right.
And then we had 26 finalists. And we took these 26 finalists by categories and we divided them up between the two sets of restaurants. We took a sample of almost a dozen restaurants, six with one menu, and six with the other menu. These were already reduced menu, each with 12, 13 of these items. And then after a few months, monitor sales, speaking to guests, speaking to the operators, speaking to the cooks in the kitchen, you know, we saw which one are the most popular and also, you know, easy to execute. And so the 12 that you see on the menu now are the winners of the survival of the fittest, right? Out of the Colosseum Arena, that was the menu tasting phase back in late summer and autumn. And also I wanna add that we made sure to have someone within the ranks of our cooks to operationalize the recipes. The way that we've written, they were far from being operationalized, right? So we, with the help of people within the ranks of our cooks, you know, to simplify some of the steps, simplify some of the procedures, and then, you know, we roll it out, you know, in a way that people in the field already understand. You know, some of the answers were translated into red scoop, blue scoop, and all of that. And on top of that, you know, we hired a company to make those really, you know, fat out videos that kids like to watch. So how can I teach you to make this dish after 2 minutes by watching the video? And it's, you know, like on your face video, very little talking, you know, punchline kind of information. And after you see the video, say, give me the spatula, put me on the grill. I can definitely do this.
That's smart. So it's not a long, boring training session. It's boom, video, here's how you do it. Doop, 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 show them how to do it. And that makes sense for cooks because cooks tend to be visual learners anyway. They're not usually big on book learning. They like to have their hands in things.
Yes. And by the way, the few seconds that you just told me that probably two cooks resigned in one of our restaurants and maybe around the United States in those few seconds, another 2,000 just resigned.
Right.
So you always have new people coming in. So it is important that, you know, you when you create a menu, you know, you cannot rest on your laurel after you do the rollout. You need to have something as a backup, your blueprint, your absolute blueprint for the new people that come in to work. And the blueprint, there is nothing better than videos. And these videos are easy to upload on everyone's smartphone. They have a geofence, so not a secret, but it's been very well received by our employees.
Great, because as you said, you have to hire a new one every day, many new ones every day. And I hear that these days, just getting people to show up for interviews is hard enough. Like you make an appointment and then they don't come.
Yes, it is definitely a different times for the restaurant business, different economy, everything is different, but we all been there before. I mean, the restaurant format of today really hasn't changed from when it first was introduced back in the 1600, the 1500, right? It's still welcome, comply, farewell. That hasn't changed. You know, yes, we do things faster, But in a regular mom and pop, two people can serve the same number of people or tables that they did 100 years ago. So at the end of the day, it's not a difficult business, but it is very difficult. You know, remember right before COVID, everything was going to make it your way, make it your way. This endless number of combinations that you can create your own dish, so prone to make mistakes, right? And now everything is, don't worry about making your way. I want to get it my way. I want to get it by Uber. I want to get it by pick it up. I want to get it by helicopter, drones, whatever, curbside, right? So everything is like that. It is an ever-changing industry. And just by the time you and I have been spending on this call, it has changed again. So if anybody say, I know the industry, they're probably lying because it just changed.
That's true. But I want to talk about some more of your menu items. Yes. Well, actually, I want to talk about those two burgers that I briefly mentioned because they're fascinating. You got three burgers and we'll talk about all of them. You got the jammed up burger.
Yes.
Which when I told people that now you go to Friendly's, they have fig jam, they said, shut up, they do not have fig jam. And yet you do. Tell our audience, please, about the jammed up burger.
All right. So the when you read the Friendly's menu in before our time, before us, you read the Friendly menu and you went through these 8 pages, right? And as you read the Friendly menu, you read the items, right? The name of the dish, and then you read the ingredients. And when you read the ingredient, it sounded like this. Bacon, 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 American cheese, tomato, 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 American cheese. You get the idea, right?
Right.
So we had 75, you could recognize, you could write down 75 ingredients across the 10 pages. And each ingredient, the collection of those ingredients were mentioned 280 times. Mm. So each ingredient, you find them 3.7 times on average in this 52 dishes. So we wanted to change the language of the menu and we want to make it so when you read the ingredients or when you read some, every now and then you get shocked. You wake up, say, oh my God, what is that? Oh my God, right?
Right.
So on purpose, we had added SKUs in a time when everybody is deleting SKUs. So simplified SKUs, we say, no, we want to have more SKUs because supply chain is impossible, but nevertheless, we're going to add more SKUs. So we went from 75 ingredients that you can identify within the menu to 104. And those 104 ingredients are mentioned 208 times instead of 280 times. And now you have decreased the average use or presence as you read the menu to 2.3% from 3.7% in 42 items, in less items. So that was key. That's why you notice, you saw it, because when you read it, read it interesting way. Now, prosciutto and melon, being in Italian, prosciutto and melon has been popular forever, but nobody really knew why until somebody decided to put salt on chocolate or salt on caramel. Oh yes, you know, a sweet and savory, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
People have been doing it for a very, very long time, right? Pear and gorgonzola, watermelon and salt. So we said, okay, to create this new recipe, we have to kind of pay attention to the study of flavors. And some of these flavors, the more opposite they are, like the fig jam, the sweet and the salt, or the burger, the salt, or the brisket. But when you combine them together, it kind of create one whole flavor, the umami that everybody's been talking about in the past. Now it's kind of obsolete. But, you know, so it was first a combination of flavors that we have to play with. And then led to the fig jam to accompany, you know, this burger with this unique meat. And the same thing was done for the chop burgers with the Doritos, you know, and the skirt burger. The skirt burger, by the way, is one of my absolute favorite. This thing is massive. It's about this big. It's a massive amount of cheese that when you look at the pictures, it forms this skirt around it. And it's burnt cheese. Who does not like burnt cheese?
Right. Well, it's like the Northern Italian Frico, right? It's
up. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And so you have that on a beef patty. You got Thousand Island dressing, lettuce, tomato, onion, pickles, and on a brioche bun. And then you got the Doritos Cool Ranch. Let me make sure I read it right. Doritos Cool Ranch chopped cheese burger. Chopped cheese is interesting. It's sort of an urban bodega kind of thing. It's a cheeseburger that you chop up, mix it up with cheese. It's sort of like a poor man's cheesesteak.
Yes.
It's even more basic meat than what you get on a cheesesteak. It's
yes, meat. Yes. In the South, you will see them as a sloppy joe.
Right.
But they are not that wet as a sloppy joe. It's a difficult item to carry. It's kind of hard to eat if you want in the car. Right. So I do not recommend it. But it has a history, you know, has a history in United States. The chopped cheese does. The skirt burger has a history in Asia, has a history on the West Coast. I wish I could say we were the absolute creators of these ideas. But, you know, we get the ideas by looking around, and we are gifted. You know, imagine a company that has presence in 50 states, and they're designed to change the menu, right? Very difficult, because now what you eat in the Northeast is very different what you eat in Southern California, and when you eat in the central state, it's very far from what you have in Southern Florida. But our restaurants are in the Northeast. We operate in 12 states in a very specific geographical area, and so the flavor profile, the way the menu was structured, we didn't have to go far from what we saw in the area. So we just had to catch up with some of these places that were taking our youth business away from us, right? But it's not just the menus. You know, now we are changing the music. We have a new company that have spent a long time with us to really understand the new music. We need to have a friendlies. We are starting to do remodeling of the restaurants. We have a new marketing campaign. We hire a new marketing agency. So the menu alone, although the menu is the absolute voice for the brand, that voice alone needs a different tonality, and the tonalities are given by interior design, music, uniform, care, attitude, and presence. Those are the tonality of the voice of the menu. But at the end of the day, the menu truly represents everyone's effort from when you get up in the morning until you leave the office or leave work. Everyone's effort is to support the menu.
Well, I want to point out that this chopped cheeseburger also has Cool Ranch Dorito tortilla chips on it.
Yes. Yeah, we wanted to give it a super crunch. We wanted to give it a super crunch. And also because, I mean, if you look at all the modern salads right now, they all have crunch. Even the ice cream, you know, ice cream, when you came up with an ice cream flavor in the past, say, okay, a blueberry or a boysenberry flavor. Now it doesn't cut it anymore. You create a new flavor, it's going to have 4 or 5 components, and it's going to have something thrown in it as a crunch or as a different texture.
It could be, right. So, it could be. So what you have now is a barking pretzel ice cream, right? Which is brown sugar flavored ice cream swirled with peanut butter that also has chocolate covered pretzel pieces and salty pretzel bark pieces. Did I get that right?
You get that right. And please don't write about it, because it's been a phenomenon. So great and so uncontrollable. If you go right now, we probably don't have it. They cannot produce enough. I think we quintuple 10 times, 20 times, we just can't stock enough of it. I don't know what kind of chord is struck with our consumer, but it's just, and we're probably gonna repeat it again next year. It's just been phenomenal.
Wonderful. So tell me about your new marketing campaign. What's that like?
So the marketing campaign, we hired a new marketing agency, Eric and Coleman. And we wanted to make sure to have a new message because you need to signal change. And they really understood the importance of friendlies, the uniqueness of friendlies, is that friendlies is a business within a business. We do fantastically well with food, and we do as good with ice cream. And it is only very, I mean, there are no other concepts in the United States. So let me reframe. There are no other chains in the United States. They do food and ice cream. Yes, you do. You have other people do food, but they do soft serve. They do custard. You know those guys, right? We do ice cream, which is far more complex and complicated, but it's also so much more delicious.
And you also retail. You don't just sell it in restaurants. You sell it in supermarkets.
Retail as well. Yes, everywhere. So they understood the importance to create a message that will let people know, come for ice cream, come for food. Don't come just for one or the other, come for both. So their campaign they just launched, the tagline is save room for ice cream. So simple. But if you look and you're going to some of our new restaurants, you see the new decor of the restaurant, the new interior design, the uniform, the hats, the bottom, the aprons, the murals, everything speaks to save room for ice cream. The new menu design, the layout of the menu, I don't know if you have a new menu in front of you, say save room for ice cream. We have gone on the TV. We're doing a lot of TV commercials right now. Also, we do the internet TV, social media, but we're really going after this save room for ice cream. And it's so simple, but so brilliant. So we are very enthusiastic and everybody's watching this, commercials, they say, oh my God, like who could have thought of that? Only Eric and Coleman, fantastic company, fantastic people.
And when did you launch this campaign?
We launched this campaign the 2nd of May. We launched a campaign the 2nd of May. The base of that is that 2/3 of the checks at Friendly's have ice cream. So big part of a DNA. We have 60 second spots. We also have a 6 second spots. And we're gonna continue the campaign for a few more months, but it's not gonna be a big, dense, compact cluster of commercials. We're gonna spread them out gently. Throughout the season, and it's a message campaign. You see the product, but it's more of a message campaign to change or try to make advantages or advances in a top of mind position. When you think of Friendly's, you know, save room for ice cream. That's the connection that we want to make. Now, ice cream is selling very, very well, and will continue to do so. And talking about ice cream, you know, we haven't touched beverages, we haven't touched ice cream, we just touched the core menu, the food. But we are working right now on the revolutionary ice cream menu. Something like, if it was a Star Wars movie, it would be called to Infinity and Beyond Sundays. It's something very, very far out, one of a kind, striking, beautiful, and very different.
Wow, I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I'll have to talk to you again when that happens. But for now, Roberto DeAngelis, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me for a little bit. And sure. I'm looking forward to trying all of your new food.